Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm absolutely blessed now to be sat down with Andy from, I'd say, one of the finest rock and roll bands, what have resurfaced again after so many years, the Chesterfield Kings. How do you do, my friend?
Very good. Pleasure to be with you, Dino.
It's great to sit down with you, and I've been excited about this because I've been waiting for this moment for a long time as a fan, but also just to see you guys, if you'd ever resurface, and you finally have. Tell me about it. Has it been a kept secret, or is it something what's just happened straight out of the, I don't know what, you know?
Well, no, it's I kind of put the band on pause for a little bit a few years back, and I wanted to try something different. Put the Chesterfield Kings on pause, and I started another band, and it's really because I had been doing it for so long. You know, I was 16 when I started, you know, playing Chesterfield Kings. And you know how you tour with other bands and you meet a lot of people that, like, you know, they're cool guys and you're having a beer with them, and like inevitably, hey man, we should do something someday.
Yeah.
And then you go by and you never do anything other than you keep on doing the same thing. And so I thought, you know what, maybe I'll try to do something different, and just out of boredom, really. And that's when I started the Empty Hearts, and it was myself, Clem Burke from Blondie, Elliot Easton from the Cars on guitar, and then Wally Palmer from the Romantics. And we had a lot of fun with it. And we did two albums, one for Universal, one for Sony. And the only caveat of that band was, is we made our pact amongst the four of us. If any guy's real band was working, that comes before the Empty Hearts. And so, inevitably, we had scheduling problems up the yin yang, and so we didn't play as much as I would have liked to. But we did play, you know, here in the States and in Japan and stuff, and we had fun. But and then we had an album scheduled to come out. We had a European tour, U.S. tour, and a Japanese tour plan, and then the pandemic hit, and it wrecked music in the world for everybody. And so, you know, the record still came out. We were never able to promote it. And it was, well, the pandemic was kind of starting to quiet down. And we, you know, people started to travel a little bit. And little Steven had invited me to come down to New York City and visit with him for a few days. And so we were down there. We were working on some stuff together. And we were out to dinner one night. And he said, you know, you should really do another Chesterfield Kings record. And I go, really? And he goes, there, you got so many fans. We get so many requests all the time. He goes, why don't you go back up to Rochester and write an album, and I'll help you produce it. I'll put it out on my label. I'll help you co-write songs if you want, whatever you want. Just get up there and do it. And so I did. There we are.
And you're back with a great single, Meet You After Midnight. But going back, this is kind of, for me, amazing. It's timeless. Your songs have always stuck around. It's fun. It's great. For people that don't know the Chesterfield Kings, and you go way back, oh, I don't know. I think the album which I first picked up was the Mindbending album, you know, the Mindbending Sounds of the Chesterfield Kings, and the classics you had on there. And then you was involved way back with Stephen Van Zandt on Wicked Cool Records, and you was doing those little shows with him way back. And it just seemed to have gathered momentum all the time, no matter what you did. And this has just done the same, hasn't it? You've dropped this single, you've just been on a tour, and from what I've seen from the outside, it's just gone through the roof again. Was you expecting this?
I gotta be honest with you, I didn't know what to expect. We kind of just did it, you know. I didn't know what to think, to be honest with you. We kind of just went out and did it. And one of the things that Steven asked me to do, he said, go up and write songs, but don't tell anybody what you're doing. Don't tell anybody. When we release the first single, that's when we'll announce the band's back, okay? And, you know, have you seen The Sopranos ever? The character?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm telling you, Stevie is exactly like Silvio Dante. So if Stevie tells you, get the fuck up there and just fucking write the songs and don't tell anybody, that's Silvio Dante telling you that. You're not going to tell him no, and you're not even going to disobey him. But he's a very, very dear friend, so I'm saying it in jokingly, but he's really like that. Anyhow, he just said, don't tell anybody. So we're sitting on pins and needles. We recorded, you know, a whole album you know, in August, in this past August. And here, I have a big recording studio here in Rochester. And we've been sitting on pins and needles waiting for the first single to come out. And it wasn't supposed to come out till April. And I was talking to Steve on the phone, you know, February. We just chat every once in a while. He goes, what's the band doing? I go, we're sitting on pins and needles waiting to play, you know. You said not to say anything. And he goes, we're doing this big thing at South by Southwest. How about maybe you guys play it? And I go, sure. And then the next day he texts me and he goes, we're doing a bunch more shows on the West Coast. How about you play those too? And I'm like, sure. We're going to rush release one of the singles. Sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so it kind of just happened. So I wasn't really thinking about it. It was literally like 3 weeks before.
Mm-hmm.
And but what a way to launch it, you know, at South by Southwest, the final night. And that was great. And it went over great. And people really dug it. And the shows all went really well. You know, I mean, we're really happily surprised that people came out and are, you know, we're playing a lot of songs. If we pick one or two songs off of every album, there's too many songs to play. Uh-huh. We can't in a set. So we're playing songs that people have always asked us to play, and they're standing there singing them with us. So that's, a good reaction.
Oh, that's great. I was just going to ask you about a set list, because you've got a mix of so many beautiful songs. It must be crazy, but you've answered that question already. I've got to go again with the songwriter. Obviously, Steve has instructed you, let's write this song. Have you had songs, what you've picked out, what didn't make the Empty Hearts albums by any chance?
Well, when I write songs, I just write songs the way I think, I don't know, it's what comes out of my head. I don't really write a certain kind of band or anything. I've always just drawn on my influences, okay? So obviously, you know, I love the Beatles, the Stones, mm-hmm. the King, you know, the Pretty Things, all the stuff that, you know, people and my generation grew up and listened to, as well as, you know, 50s, you know, Chuck Berry, Little Richard, and then all the blues, you know, Muddy Waters and Holland Wolf, all that stuff. This is all stuff that goes on in my head, you know, Buddy Holly. And then when I write songs, it's really just drawing on those things. And I don't know. When we did the Empty Heart stuff, you know, Wally and I would get together. We get together with Elliot, and we just kind of throw ideas. But those guys like the same stuff, so
yes,
it was really easy to play with them. You know, they Clam. You know, we all grew up listening to the same stuff, so it wasn't like pulling teeth. It was actually a pleasure to do. So, with the Chesterfield King stuff, I just over the pandemic, I wrote a lot of songs, so I poured out of my mind. So
yeah, yeah. I've got to go on for people that don't, again, the person you are, you're a big music fan, you've got, like I say, great material, you had the Empty Hearts, you got the Chesterfield Kings, but people, a lot of people don't realise that you are way in with the music in many ways with your shop and also your love for music, memorabilia, if you can call it that, and music instrumenting, the creating of those kind of things. And am I right that a long time, not too long ago, that you got access to all of the Fab Four's gear in a secret location to write a book?
Well, I did the research for Beatles gear. It's a book that I wrote that did quite well. It came out, the original book came out, I think, 2001, but I did all the research in the 90s. And a lot of that stemmed from the fact that the Chesterfield Kings, we were trying to sound like our favorite bands. Mm-hmm. You know, we wanted a band from the 60s, you know, and we were doing it in the late 70s, early 80s. And, you know, people thought we were crazy. You know, they, you know, why do you want to sound like that? Because we do. That's what, you know, we were adamant about it. We're, you know, young punky kids going, you know, that's what we want to sound like. You know, we want to sound like the Crippers. We want to sound like the Stones, you know. So we bought the right kind of guitars. We bought the right kind of amps. But still things were missing. So because, you know, I collect vintage stuff, vintage guitars and amps. I started to really study it. And there wasn't an internet or anything like that at the time. And you'd have to collect stuff. You'd have to collect old catalogs. And I would do that. And then I kind of took a big liking to the Beatles thing. And so a guy that I was working with said, man, you should just sit on with a six, you know, no, he said, buy a case of beer and lock yourself in a room for the weekend and write down everything you know about Beatles equipment, and you'd probably have a book. Well, I actually took them up on it, and I thought, wow, that shouldn't take long. 6 years later, I still owe that guy a punch in the arm. It took forever. But I did gain access, and I photographed the Beatles' equipment, their guitars, their drums. I sorted out all Ringo's stuff, and it did really well, and so well that the publisher asked me to write a similar book about the Rolling Stones, and then I ended up working directly with the Rolling Stones, with Bill Wyman and Keith mm-hmm. Richards and everybody, and go through all their guitars. And I got to play a lot of them and stuff. So they say I'm supposedly some sort of expert on that stuff. I guess I know more about it than I want to at this point, but I get called a lot from auction houses and museums and stuff to authenticate things. So I do a lot of weird music stuff. Yes.
It's great. And I love that as well, because you're supplying your music, your music ship. I don't know what you want to call it, fan of all these greats, and you replicate some of these amazing instruments that were played way back. And some of the big guys now are playing your instruments on stage. Stevie Van Zandt's one of them, the beautiful purple gift you gave him not too long ago, what made appearance with Bruce. And talking about Ringo, what people don't realize, Ringo appeared on the second album of the NTRs, which was a great thing. And that's probably through, again, yourself and Wally being in the All-Star Band many years ago. That must have been something just like mind-blowing.
Well, it was really interesting because we had recorded all the bed tracks for the second album. And Clem had to take off to do a Blondie tour. So we recorded for a week and then he split and we stayed and continued working, myself and Wally and Elliot. And then Ed Stasium was producing. And we were out to dinner after recording all day, and Wally kept on saying, I think Clem played on top of the beat on this one song, and it was really bugging him, and he kept on bringing it up. And we were having martinis after dinner one night, and he goes, when I play with Ringo, I used to stand right in front of his drum riser, and he always plays in the pocket. He plays in the pocket, and that's what the song needs. And I go, okay, big shot, why don't you fucking call Ringo up and ask him to play on it then? And he goes, I can't ask him. I can't do that. So then it became like a joke.
Yeah.
Like for about 2 months, he went back to Detroit. And like, I'd get up in the middle of the night to get something to drink or something. And just to fuck with him, I would send him a picture of like Ringo from Help or something like that. Just a text, right?
Yeah.
So, your phone goes off at 4 o'clock in the morning and you're like, what the fuck? And it's just a picture of Ringo.
Yeah.
And I would do it relentlessly for like weeks and weeks. And then eventually Ringo called Wally up about something and he was asking him, Wally, how's the record coming? And he goes, well, it's going great, but some funny you should ask. There's one song that the guys have been kind of busting my chops on, it would really be great if you could play on it. He goes, Ringo told him, he goes, what do you need me for? You got Clem Burke. He's one of the best drummers there is. And Wally told him, yeah, but he's not. He doesn't play like you, Ringo. You play different. You need a song in the pocket. And so he's, yeah, sure. Send me the tracks. I'll play to it. And he did. So we were very fortunate.
Nah, it's beautiful. And your craftsmanship on all these albums, what I love about it is it's got your own feel to it, of whether it's the Empty Hearts, the Chesterfield Kings, but you can hear the influence of the Birds, the Beatles, the Stones, even going to some of the girl groups, the Shangri-Las, the Crystals, people like that. You've got that little taste, and I love how you mix it all up and you create this flavour of something, and you've just got this wah at the end of it. It's great stuff. What's the plans now then for the next? Is it going to be album drop, touring? What's happening?
Well, they have a bunch of singles scheduled, and we have a whole album. We actually recorded, 20 new songs. So we have a lot of material, and they requested it. They said, look, just record a ton of stuff. And so Ed Stasium, who I worked quite a bit with, he's a very dear friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
He came in and produced the album. I co-produced it with him. And, I have a big recording studio here in Rochester where we recorded a lot of Chesterfield King stuff, but we recorded both Empty Hearts records. And the reason why I like working here is because I have like every cool vintage piece of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Like You have, like, you know, obviously the Hammond B3, a Mellotron. But I'm really proud to say that, like, I have, like, every cool vintage keyboard, every vintage amp, every vintage guitar. I have, you know, Neumann mics, everything you need to do a record. There was one piece I was missing, because I got a song that I wrote on a harpsichord. But I wanted to get, and they're hard to find, I wanted to get the same electric Baldwin harpsichord that the Beatles used on Because. And they're impossible. They were made by Baldwin, Baldwin electric harpsichord. They only made less than 400 of them.
Jesus.
And I've been scouring everywhere for years to find one. I finally found one right before we recorded the record at the University of Wisconsin.
Wow.
So I got some guys to get it for me. I had it all refurbished and we use it on the new record, which I'm very happy about. So we have a lot of fun. So Ed came in and we worked on this. You know, we did put a few songs, but they're all going to start coming out and the LP will be, you know, later in the year.
I can't wait.
There's a whole string of singles that will be coming out.
Oh, and do you know, I'm one of these guys what love the vinyl. And I know there's vinyls everywhere right now. It's come back round, but I'm talking way back when I grew up with my old man's records. The things what I love about the record is how it sounds on there. But the better thing what I love is that when it's released on Wicked Cool, them vinyls just have something about them. I don't know what it is. They look cool. They sound great. And it's got the whole feel about it. And I guess it's coming out on all platforms, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Dino, when will this podcast be released?
We can drop it whenever we need.
Because I could, if it's after the release of the, was it April? I'll look it up here. There's a new single that comes out on the 19th of April, and it will be on vinyl.
Beautiful. Absolutely so, beautiful. We'll get it out on that. I need to see these, but I'm going to be purchasing these vinyls. I don't care if I have to pay the air price, what it costs. You know, I'm a fan of this stuff. Whew.
And there'll be a lot of vinyl coming out. Let's just put it that way.
Oh, it's great. It's great. It really is. Do you have those moments still, though, now where obviously you've been in this business a long time? Like you say, you've been with the Chesterfield Kings 16. You've played on all the big shows. You've played the tours. Do you have those moments still when you are sitting down with these guys where you have to pinch yourself, think, this is a pretty cool moment again? Do you have them moments still?
You mean with the Chesterfield Kings when we play?
Yeah, with Chesterfield Kings or anybody will, when you're on the, I don't know, when you're hanging with your mates and you get a moment where somebody walks through the door and you're like, okay, this is another one of them moments what I'll remember. You know, the ones that stand out. Do you still get those moments around these guys? Yeah,
we literally just had one on this past tour. So we played South by Southwest in Texas, and then couple days later, we were in Phoenix, Arizona, playing a show. And it happened to be the same day that Springsteen was doing his first show of this year's tour.
Yeah.
And it was all Phoenix. So Stevie called me up and he goes, come down to the show before your show. We're going to hang out. Great. So we go, you know, they bring us backstage and all that. And he brings, Alice Cooper was there because Alice lives in Phoenix.
Okay.
And so Alice comes up to us and he goes, man, I really like that new single. I love you guys. You guys are great. That new single's great. He goes, as a matter of fact, you guys are cool because look at all your Beatle boots, man.
Yes.
We got to get a picture of all our Beatle boots together. And he really like was adamant about it. So there's a picture of us with all our, because he was wearing cool boots too. And so Steve, the Royal, took a picture. So to me, you know, I'm a huge Alice Cooper fan. I love Priest for You. That first album is phenomenal. As a matter of fact, I was talking to Alice about it. And, you know, all that early stuff, it was a big influence on the Chesterfield Kings. We actually did a Spiders song, you know, the band before Alice Cooper. And, you know, when you get guys like that you really like a lot, and they're saying, man, I really like your new single, and man, I really like you guys a lot. That's one of those weird moments where you go, wow, that's kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
So I just had one.
Yeah, it's great stuff. I love people who don't know the Beatle boots, you know, it's a high heel or a short heel, mainly high heel winkle pickers, beautiful little things, you know.
Yeah.
And it's great. You know, you've got to own some if you're into this kind of stuff. You've got to look cool, right? You know, that's what we're here for.
And that was always the Chesterfield Kings thing. You know, we always wanted to sound like a 60s band, but we all also wanted to dress like that.
Yeah.
You know, you look at even when we first started to our whole career, we always had a certain look. You know, some bands do that. Some bands don't care about it, but we always thought the coolest bands in the 60s always look cool too, you know?
Absolutely.
Be it, you know, every cool band in the 60s look cool. Everybody.
Yeah.
So we always adopted that, and we still do. And apparently Alice Cooper noticed it.
But it's a great thing, again, and when you look cool and you sound cool, it just gives it that extra little bit of flavor with the songs to go with it. It's really cool. Like I said, it's a blessing to be sat down with you talking these kind of stories and hearing all about the music, because, again, I've been following you for a long time. And for the new people that don't really know who the Chesterfield Kings are yet, they're going to find out who they are, because we're going to try our best to keep this music alive and introduce them to it. And all this stuff is on the websites. It's on the Wicked Cool Record sites. It's on your own stuff. You've got the Fab Gear websites. Everything's on there for if you're a fan of all the instruments. It's really cool. I'm really grateful that you've sat down with me. We could talk all night. We really could. It feels like we could just grab something out of the cold and just sit and, you know, and drink all night talking all these stories. I've got to appreciate it.
Great. Well, listen, thank you so much for having me, and thanks for spreading the word.